When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I miss the one I care for more than I miss nobody.
Hey, it's Steve Balton. Welcome back to My Turning Point. This week, Sage Bava and I have a really fun conversation with jazz great Joshua Redman. He has a wonderful new album called Where Are We, which features vocals from Gabriel Cavassa. Really great record. Fun conversation on Springsteen, America, and so much more. Hope you enjoy this one as much as we did.
Well, wait. So what would you like your second personality to be? Like if you could merge off into split personality, what would you want your alter ego to be?
I don't know, but something closer to the way, whatever my personality is as a musician, I would prefer to be that in the rest of my life. I think I'd be a much more highly functioning and more satisfied human being. But you can't have it all, right?
I absolutely fucking love that answer. It's really funny. We went to see last night our friend Queen Herbie on stage. Do you know her, Queen Herbie?
I don't know.
She's like an R&B singer. She used to be in a band called Carmen, but she's a very, very, very close friend of ours. And it's funny because Sage just played an amazing show at Vibrato with Gabriel Cavassa.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah.
Yes.
Tell me she had been down there. Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
The reason I bring that up, and she'll talk to you about Gabby in a second, because they're friends, is it's funny because we were discussing this last night. It's a very interesting thing to watch people that you know well get mm-hmm. on stage and become different people. And it's funny, one of my favorite artists of all time is Patti Smith. And mm-hmm. I remember reading an interview with her where she said, she's like the most sweetest woman in the world. She's like, when I get on stage, I'm half animal.
Yeah.
So for you, this is not where I expected to start, but I love this conversation. Do you become a different person on stage, and do you become a different person playing music? And when did you first realize that there was Josh Redman, the person, and Joshua Redman, the artist?
I probably shouldn't have led you down this line of questioning, but I'm game for it. I don't want to say, I don't think I've become a different person. I mean, at least I hope I don't. To the extent that any of us have, to the extent that the self is real, which it probably isn't, I would like to think that, I'm a fairly integrated self, and hopefully the self that exists in music is related to the self that exists outside of music. But I guess, I kind of feel like I'm often my best self in music, and I guess, it, mainly because I think that it's always been through music that I kind of have been able to relate to the world, and maybe in particular to relate to other beings in the world, other humans, in the most kind of honest and genuine and in a way, unselfconscious way. As a human outside of music in the world, I carry a fair amount in my head, and I have a noisy head. And I was super introverted as a kid, probably anxious. These are kind of the way I'm wired. And with music, I've always felt kind of the most relaxed and at peace and accepting of myself. And in a way, I kind of lose myself and also feel very, in a way, I feel I've come in a kind of a musical extrovert and very, yeah, just I'm in the moment and going with the flow. I mean, it sounds a little woo-woo, but it is kind of, music is kind of a spiritual salvation for me in some respects.
I don't think that's woo-woo at all, but go for it. So, Sage, go for it.
No, I had to share Ann Wilson the other day. She put it so perfectly. She said, I become invisible behind the voice.
Mm-hmm.
And in being in different worlds that she creates as a composer, she just, that is what is the personality, and then she just goes away. So
mm-hmm.
I wanted to ask about your creation of these different worlds, and perhaps that's the split personality that we're speaking on, and your navigation in the composition of it, in the feeling of it, and how it's just a different facet of you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I definitely don't feel like I'm creating another space or another world for myself. I don't feel like that at all. I feel like that space and that world just exists, and I enter into it. And you know, the space and that world is the space and world of making music with other beings, you know. And that's a very it's a very comfortable space for me. It's also a very sacred space for me. It's a space that I've kind of I've entered from a very early age. I mean, I wasn't Steve, you asked about like, when did I first kind of discover whatever it is that I think I've discovered about myself. I'm not sure if I've discovered anything, but I've been playing music for a very long time. Not seriously. I didn't get serious about music till I was after college, but I've always felt like something about picking up, well, even before I played the saxophone, like picking up any instrument, it just kind of there was something that this chatter kind of melted away. You know, this chatter in my brain melted away, and there was a way. I've always kind of gone to instruments to kind of like try to express something, even if I didn't have the skills or the language or the tools to express those things. I don't feel like I'm creating a world. I feel like I'm entering into a world, and that world is a gift for me. It's a privilege to be a part of that.
Okay, well, I just want to ask you quickly, and then you guys can go back for a second. But since it's funny, you weren't planning on this line of questioning. I will ask you about, because my favorite artist in the history of the world is Springsteen. So mm-hmm. Streets of Philadelphia, where'd it come from?
Well, you have to ask him where it came from. I mean, where did the idea come from to do that song? You know, I mean, it is a bit bizarre, and you're not the first person who's asked about this. I knew this was going to come when we chose to cover the song and to record it. If you had asked me, if you told me 20 years ago, if you had told me, 20 days before we did the record date, or I don't know, like you're going to do a cover of a Bruce Springsteen song. I mean, I would have been like, you're crazy. And I have the utmost respect for Bruce Springsteen. He's one of the icons of popular music, and, especially for someone of my generation. He's an incredible musician, incredible man. There's what he's done for the music and what he's done for our society is really phenomenal. I've always dug his music. I've never been like, I did grow up listening to quite a bit of rock and roll, but Springsteen, I always appreciate his music, but I'm not like a rabid Bruce Springsteen fan. As much as I love his music, I never really would have thought it could be necessarily the best match for a jazz interpretation or my sort of jazz interpretation. But when Gabrielle and I started to plan the record, and we kind of had this concept of doing songs about different places in the United States. Obviously, that song, the idea came up because it's, you know, one of the most iconic songs about a place in the United States, you know. And I mean, I remember when that movie came out, when Philadelphia, the movie with Tom Hanks and Denzel Washington came out, I remember the song, you know. It was a very, very, it was a very important, obviously important movie, important song, important moment in our culture. And, you know, I mean, I think I originally kind of was like, oh, there's Streets of Philadelphia, but we can't do that. And Gabrielle was like, yeah, we can't do that. But there was at some point at which she, you know, when we were communicating about the record, it was during the pandemic. So we were basically talking mostly through text the whole time. We actually didn't meet until about a month before we recorded the album, but meet in person, I should say. But there was one point at which she said, I think she was like, oh, I'm like listening to this song in the car and it's beautiful. I'm crying. Like we should do it. I think we should do it. So I was like, okay, let's give it a try. And I kind of started, you know, all the structure of the song is basically preserved. It's the same basic. It's you know, we changed the form a little bit, but it's the exact same lyrics. It's the same fundamental harmonic structure. The melody is pretty much the same. Really, what I did is just kind of like took the preserved the structure, but just kind of put these other elements like within the harmonies. These sort of very not Bruce Springsteen sorts of little motions within the broad harmonic structure. And, you know, just, you know, it's obviously a very different treatment in terms of the groove, you know, in terms of the sonics of it, you know. And I think it's a testament to Gabrielle. She really made that song her own. I think she did a beautiful job with it.
Well, I think that's one of the cool things about working with another artist is, of course, you know, they can bring their own vision to it. And again, she might have a completely different vision. Now, I'm going to let Sage go again in 1 second, but I do have to ask just as a super fan, have you heard from Bruce about the version yet?
I have not. You know, I haven't. I have heard nothing. I don't. It's not like, you know, it's not like not like I'm in his DMs or anything. you know, I haven't heard anything. I hope he doesn't hate it. I haven't gotten a cease and desist yet, so maybe that's a good sign. He probably isn't even conscious of it, but you know, we'll see.
Well, in fairness, he had to cancel all September dates because he was sick, so he's been a little distracted, but I feel very confident that you'll hear it, and I feel very confident that he'll love it. Because I think for any artist, especially what's cool is when you can take a song and make it into something completely different. Yeah. That's, and it's funny because Sage and I were talking about with Ann Wilson the other night again, and so I'm going to let her jump back in, you know, but I just had to ask about the Springsteen stuff as a diehard fan.
Yeah. Well, it's a privilege to be able to, it was a privilege really to be able to record it and to you know, explore our take on it. And now it's out of our hands, right? You know, like we create the music, put it out in the world, and then it means what it means or doesn't mean to everybody else. Yeah.
I'd love to know more about this collaboration with Gabrielle. I love her voice. I love her music for a long, long time. And within this world that you're both entering, I like that better than creating. Thank you for that. The process of how it all came to be, I'd love to hear from you on that.
You mean the process of our collaboration, basically, like how we, I mean, it's definitely not a typical story. It's definitely not, especially for me, in terms of the way I've kind of gone about connecting with other musicians and building musical relationships. And I think some of it has to do with just the unique conditions of the time, you know, the pandemic. I think I'm not like in any way this album or the collaboration is about the pandemic, but I think the way in which it, the genesis of it is certainly, I don't think it would have happened the same way had that not existed. And I guess what I mean by that is, Gabrielle is obviously from California. I think she's from Escondido. And she was in San Francisco. I don't know the exact years, but I think in the early 10s, maybe, she went to San Francisco State, I think, and then was on the scene here. I live in Berkeley, California. I was born and raised, and I've been back here since 2002. I was in New York from 91 to 2002. She was here and playing and gigging. I may have heard her name, but I wasn't aware of her. I never heard her while she was here, that's not atypical, because when I'm here, I'm really a homebody. I feel in a way more of a connection to the New York scene than I do to the San Francisco scene. And then she left and she went to New Orleans, and, you know, I probably had heard of her. When she won the when she won the Sarah Vaughan competition, feel like I heard a bit about her then. Really what happened, my manager, her name is Anne-Marie Wilkins, and it's strange because my manager, she's an awesome manager, but really she was like, from the beginning, this is a strict dividing line. You deal with the music, I deal with the business. Never the twain shall meet, you know? So like I don't, although I know she loves music and has good ears, like we've never really had creative musical conversations before. She's kind of like, you do what you're going to do and let me handle the rest, you know? But she was at a function, some sort of event in New Orleans, and she texted me out of the blue, and she was like, I'm at this party and it's not even a concert and a lot of people aren't really listening, or like people are talking, you know, but there's this woman here and she's singing and she's just absolutely riveting. And you've got to listen, you got to check her out. And like under normal circumstances, I probably would have seen the text and just been like on the road, like whatever, you know, but I was home. I wasn't doing shit, you know, chopping garlic or something, you know? And so I was like, okay, yeah, whatever. Yeah, I'll check her out, you know? So how do you check people out when you can't go out and meet them or hear their music? You know, you go on the internet, you know, and I'm not super savvy with the internet, but, you know, I had a lot of time, as we all did on the pandemic, to bounce around on the internet. And, you know, I mean, I, you know, heard a record and I loved a record. And then, you know, there was something about her. You know, obviously Sage, as you say, her voice is, you know, she's got a beautiful instrument. You know, it's deep, it's rich, that she's expressive. But there's just this intimacy and this almost like a vulnerability and also a sensuality. It draws you in. And so I was like, yeah, she sounds great. And I've worked with vocalists before, but always as a sideman, never in one of my own projects. And we started communicating and decided to do a record together. So that's what this is.
I can't wait to hear the whole thing and have it be shared. It's such a blending of her world and your world. And I want to hear more about the process. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, sure. The meeting.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, like, I think this is, I don't feel like I have that many strengths as a musician, other than that I love music and that I don't love my own music. So I work hard to try to make it better, you know, so that's a strength as I try to improve, you know. But if I have a strength as a musician, I think one of them is that I think I'm a good listener. And that I also approach I think I'm relatively empathetic as a musician. And I also approach every musical situation, I think with a very collaborative spirit, whether it's my project or someone else's project or a joint project. Really my attitude is always like, how can I enter this world, this musical world, with this person and or these people, and try to be a part of this world in the most honest, expressive way? And how can I help contribute to the collective story that's being told, to the conversation, to the music, the whole of the music that's being made, not focused on like my part, right? So I think that, like, you know, once we started talking about doing a record together, it was very important for me. And, you know, I mean, it was together, but it was going to be under, you know, it was clear it was going to be under my direction, in the sense that it was going to be like whatever label I was going to end up on, it would probably be my label, you know, like I was kind of, I was going to produce it, you know, but it was really important for me to kind of get to know her as a musician, and also like really, you know, I it was very important for me to not be like, okay, we're going to do this and this and this, and these are the arrangements, and then you need to sing this. You know, that's not how I operate with any musician. But I think especially with a vocalist, because I don't have as much experience, you know, playing with and collaborating with vocalists. And especially I think with Gabrielle, because I think part of her superpowers is this deep emotional connection that she that she establishes with the song that she's singing. And I think that's very, very important for her. I learned that very early on. I got a sense of it early on, and it was really confirmed once we were actually recording together, is that even though she technically she's a great, you know, she's got a great instrument, like I think technical execution and perfection are really not high, and she'd have to speak for herself, but like I don't want to say they're not high on her values her list of values, but like I think for her, like the emotional expression and the connection are always going to take precedence over any sort of issue of technical execution and perfection. And I think that like even in choosing songs, it was really like, does she feel like she connects with the songs? Yeah.
Well, I'm going to jump in for a second because I want to ask you about this, and this is interesting to me. Do an album like this, right? I imagine it triggers a great deal of memories of places that you've been. Or it's funny because I talk with artists all the time about doing covers, how you get into these songs. I don't know if it's triggered specific memories. And of course, being an LA guy, I have to ask, what the hell? How is there no LA song on the album?
Yeah, well, you know, I apologize for that. There's a...
All good, I'm just teasing,
A lot of great cities, you know? I mean, like, at first, like, one of the hardest decisions was to, like, for me, was to just, you know, make it, like, rule out, you know, the rest of the world, you know, I mean, it's like, why is it just America? But like, you know, you have to cut some, you know, you have to focus somewhere. There were a few LA songs that I considered. There's actually, a cool Elliott Smith song called Los Angeles. I actually did, and this isn't LA specifically, but I feel like it's kind of LA. There's a Randy Newman song, Los Angeles, about Los Angeles, but that I knew wasn't going to work. We worked on an arrangement of, believe it or not, Hotel California. But we tabled that. We may revisit it for some of the live stuff where we're talking about it. So apologies to, you know, that'll be volume.
It's all good.
That'll
it's
be funny, volume two.
One LA song.
Yeah.
I gotta go X Los Angeles.
Huh? Yes.
I said, it's all good. For me, the definitive LA song is X Los Angeles.
But I remember that vaguely. Yeah.
It's a punk song. I don't know that it would have lent itself. I just happen to love that song. But let's talk for a second just about the memories and the things that, you know, because again, it's funny. I'm sure that, you know, as you're doing something like this, you know, it triggers being in Minneapolis or New England or, you know, so were there favorite memories of these places that came back to you from doing these songs or things that you started to think about these places that you hadn't thought about in some time?
Yeah, I mean, for sure, when you're doing a song about a place, if you've been to the place, you know, memories are conjured, and yeah, I mean, but I think in most cases with this material, it was like we had to inhabit the song, you know, because not all of the songs are specifically about, in fact, many of them are not about the city so much. I mean, yes, I left my heart in San Francisco. It's all about the city of San Francisco. It's also about love. Yeah. New England is like, you know, this kind of wistful, as is San Francisco, longing for a place, you know, kind of, you know, this nostalgic kind of wistful remembrance of a place that it, that has great romantic resonance for you. But, you know, some of the other songs, by the time I get to Phoenix is not about Phoenix, right? You know, so Streets of Philadelphia isn't really about Philadelphia. Yeah. So I think that like it was more about trying to inhabit the song and serve the song in our own unique way. It wasn't about like, oh, I remember like when I got my first deep dish in Chicago or whatever, you know.
Cool. Well, Sage, you want to wrap it up?
Yeah, I'd love to know about the beautiful album cover. It's one of my favorite album covers I've seen in a long time.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I can't tell you so much about it, but because I don't. So the great artistic team, the art directors at Blue Note, they found it. You know, with artwork, I kind of made a decision early on that I didn't want my image on the cover. And I guess if mine wasn't going to be on, then it didn't make sense for Gabrielle's to be either. Although it would have been a great image. But I've done a lot of records like that, and I wanted to find some sort of image that would, you know, not that would be evocative of some of the maybe feelings and ideas that might be at work in the record, on the album, but not definitive, not like this is what the album is about. And, you know, they found a bunch of, I think this might have been like a stock photo that was available. And they, you know, they sent me a bunch of options, but this one resonated. I didn't know what it was. Someone later told me that they think it's, the photo of, a art installation in somewhere in Utah. I'm blanking on the name. It's the something tunnels, maybe the tunnels. So I think it's from somewhere in Utah. It was an image that spoke to me, and I thought captured some of the feeling that some of that, and maybe even some of the ideas that are kind of at work underneath the surface with this music.
I'm going to try and sneak in two really quick ones. One, will we see a sequel album? Because the first song that comes to my mind is Not Even About LA. I just want to hear what you would do with Tom Waits' San Diego Serenade.
That was actually on the list, and I'm not sure why that didn't, because that's an obvious, when I was listening to that, I was like, oh yeah, this will work great as a jazz ear type of song. If we sell a couple of these records, maybe we'll get to do another one. Who knows?
Nice. And the last question is, it's funny, Stage and I are working on this project together. We've been working on this book where we've been talking with millions of artists, what feels like millions of artists, about the relationship between music and sort of the universe and how so much music comes, you know, when you talk to songwriters, they'll tell you so much music comes through sort of like a channeling. But it's interesting because I'd love to get your version of that as an instrumentalist, because I'm sure that in improvising and in playing, you felt this so many times.
What are you saying?
I'm sorry. Sort of feeling of like channeling, where the music, as Ben Harper put it, where your antenna's up and the music just comes to you.
Oh yeah, where the music is playing you. I mean, that's the goal. That's the flow. You know, that's being in the zone. I mean, athletes talk about it too. I'm not an athlete, you know, but absolutely. I mean, that's what we live for, you know, and that's kind of what I was referring to before is this sense of like music is at once this act of self-realization, but also this act of self-transcendence, you know, and when you feel like you're at once an agent, but also even more so the vehicle. That's the Jones. Like, that's the drug. That's the thing that we're going for all the time. We may not, you know, I think as we do this more, maybe we can it's still elusive. Maybe we improve our batting percentage a little bit. Maybe we can drop in there a little more often as we get more familiar with it. But it's no guarantee. And especially when you're playing, especially when you're an instrumentalist, and especially when you're playing improvised music, you know, it's you never know. But it's the most amazing. One of the most amazing feelings in the world.
Man, I know we can both keep talking to you all day, but I know you had a hard out. So is there anything that you want to add we did not ask you about?
No, it was fun. I enjoyed speaking with you both. Thank you so much. I hope you got what you needed.
That was great. Thank you.
Great. Thanks so much.
Hey, it's Steve Balton. You've been listening to My Turning Point with Sage Bava and I interviewing Joshua Redman. Thanks.
Black and whispering as the rain on the streets of
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.